ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णकृष्णाय विद्महे श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिने नमस्ते सर्वदेवे सहोदराणि प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि अशक्तरविशतारिणे पञ्चकपादमुद्यक्ष
the material qualities. Never.
Never.
Enjoy. Mukto hitaba vipriyat sadeham.
Mukto
hitaba vipriyat sadeham.
Mukto hitaba vipriyat sadeham.
Arabham ashtam abhimana shunya.
Arabham ashtam abhimana shunya.
Arabham ashtam abhimana shunya. Body by fluid activities. As clearly mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, मम चाजो पटवचाने भक्तियोगेन सेवते साधनान सलतीत्यायतान ब्रह्मपुरुषाः अवश्यते. One who engages in full devotional service and does not call down in any circumstance at once transcends the modes of material nature. He comes to the level of Brahman. Regardless of what we have done in our past lives, if we engage ourselves in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord in this life, we will always be situated in the Brahma-bhuta liberating state, free from the actions, and will not be obliged to accept another material life. Takva deham anarjanna iti man eti so na. After giving up his body, it's not so easy. One who has acted in that way does not accept another material body, but instead goes back home, back to Godhead. Mukto vidhavat vidhyat sadeham arabdam ashram kidiman shumidhyat. Itanarutam pratyapanitra king vantyapte adhikunanapte. Even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body in which he sleeps according to his past karma. Without misconceptions, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering bootstrapped the way an awakened person regards a dream he had while sleeping. He thus remains steadfast and never works to achieve another material body under the influence of the framework of material. This is part of a series of verses in which Lord Brahma is persuading Siddhartha to not give up his being. Persuasion is one of the things that goes on in the Bhagavatam, much as in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is persuading Arjuna to do this. He's talking here about acceptance, and I think it's an interesting verse because it's suggested, it's implied. Discussing two kinds of acceptance. We'll get to that in a minute, but first of all, the point in the beginning of the verse, mukta api, although liberated. In a way, Brahma is saying no exceptions. Even a liberated person is a business of the fact. Following those duties is applicable even if one's liberated. Now there's a question that can come up here, but we'll get to that later on. This question seems to say otherwise in the Gita. But in this case, as Prabhupada is explaining, it seems that Brahma is anticipating the attitude or the idea that Priyavakta has look, I'm not like so many people who need to do their duties. Why, once they are so much absorbed in material existence, this is the way for them to get out. But I've already figured out what this material world is about, and that's why I want to get out. I want to make my move now, consequential move to attain liberation. And, oh, how many times in the Bhagavatam we hear of kings who at some point in their lives decide, I've had enough. I've tried long enough to get the people of my kingdom to follow their duties. And it's time now for me to follow the theories. So many examples are there. And also in history, the famous king of history, prince, is Lord Buddha. He's called Lord Buddha as an incarnate position. We all know the story, how he, as still a prince, decides after seeing what material existence is about, to give it all up before getting further entangled in it. According to one tradition, he was confronted by his father, or he approached his father for blessings to leave, and his father said, well, no, you can't just leave like this. And then Gautama Buddha Shakyamuni said, well, I'll stay here if you can guarantee that I will not be affected by old age, disease, and death. As he was offering, giving you this ego. What more do you want? Well, what I want is to be free of old age, disease, and death. Can you guarantee me these things? All right, Dad, and another, that was out of his action came about the Buddhist tradition. And then there's the Jain tradition in India, which is very much very interesting, and it's very much focused on renunciation, and they have many stories in their tradition of kings who convert to Jainism, give up their kingdom, and go to the forest. One of the more famous is Bahubali. You know about Bahubali? Do you want to know about Bahubali?
Yes.
Bahubali is, according to the Jain tradition, the second of the 100 sons of Rishabhadeva, and the 100 sons, who is the oldest? Rishabhadeva had 100 sons.
Oh, sorry,
Bharatmaharaj. Yes, Bharatmaharaj. Well, Bharatmaharaj and Bahubali came into quite some intense rivalry, as brothers will do. The kingdom had been divided, apparently, the two elders received most of the property, most of the land, and then it became a rivalry, and the rivalry accelerated and intensified, and it looked like there was going to be a war. And sages at this point stepped in and said, we don't want to see the whole everything destroyed. Please, if you want to have a fight, then make it a duel between the two. You know, like in the 19th century, ten paces and turn around and shoot each other. So they agreed. And the duel would consist of, let's see, what was it? Three contests. The first contest was called Drishti Yudha. Drishti means sight. So presumably they have to first see who can stare the other one down. The second one was Jala Yudha. Jala means water, and I can't say whether this meant who can stay underwater the longest and what. And the third was Bhagavad means heart, so it's going to be a flood out of this heart. But Bhagavad Bali means strength, was known for his great strength of heart. And everybody knew if he gives one punch to the head of Bharata, it's all going to be over. And Bhagavad knew this as well. And so before they went into the fight, Bhagavad stopped. And instead of punching his brother, he thought, this is my older brother. I'm not supposed to be punching my older brother. I'm supposed to be offering my respects. And so that's what he did. He bowed down before his brother. His brother was like his brother. And he said, okay, now what? Bhagavad said, dear brother, if you take the people, I'm going to. Following the example of Vishnu, their father, he goes to the forest, and now what does he do in the forest? Well, what do kings do when they renounce and go to the court? Nothing. He stood there. Now, Hiranyakashipu, who also, of course, went to the court into that story. But he did more than just stand there. He stood on his tiptoes and he raised his hand in the air like that. But Bhagavad just stood there with his hands down, but his austerity was just do that, just stand there and do that. To the point that plants, vines were growing around his legs. And therefore, you'll see if you go to South India, I believe it's in Karnataka, a place called Shravana Devadula. There is a big hill, and on top of the hill is a big murti of Bhagavad Gita. He's more than 50 feet tall. It's 15 meters tall. And it's, the murti has vines going on. That's Bhagavad Gita. And that's the Jain tradition of denunciation of kings. Is celebrated. But Bhagavad is on the same. Don't do anything prematurely. Do your duty. Even you may be liberated, get back on your throne, mister. Get back to work. Do your duty. Accept your duty. And I think that it's interesting. How does it express in this verse? Mukto bhakti bhavadrivya sadevam aradham ashnan. The word ashnan. What else does it mean? Exactly. And what do you do when you eat? Well, okay, that's later on. But actually, that's a good point. Eat and then digest. Eating, actually, the chewing is part of the digestive process. You're eating as the beginning of the digestion process. So, what's being suggested here, as I understand it, is that Dharma has two aspects. It has as the scholar would say, there's the descriptive dimension and there's the normative. Descriptive means describing what is, and normative means describing and saying what should be. So, in ethics, in ethics, so it's very much ought to be done, describing. So dharma, we understand, what is the dharma of a living entity? It is, in terms of description, we are eternal servants of his Lord. There is no changing that. That's just what we are. No matter what we do or don't do, what we understand, what we don't understand. And dharma is very much what should be done. You are this or that in this life. In the case of Priyavrata, you are a king. You should act as a king. And so by this acting as you should, you will come to realize what you are. But it goes further than that in this verse. It's kind of neat, actually. There's another kind of acceptance of being talked about. And that is the acceptance of what you've done before. It's, to put it in a New Age term, accepting the dark side of yourself. To get to the light, to accept that up to now I did so much in ignorance, I accept it. And I move on from there. An example, what's the example? It's a dream, a dreamt, so many terrible things. Now I wake up and life goes on. But that accepting is a kind of activity also. And one form of this, it seems to me, is what we find with Bhakti Thakur in his song Gopinath, which is very much a kind of confessional song. How's it go? Gopinath, Mama Nihe Dhamma Shuno, Ishtai Purushana, Sadatam Ratam, Ichitami Moradu. So, Mama Nivedana, please listen to my prayer. This Vishayi Durjana, he's talking about himself. I'm a Vishayi, I'm a Sanskrita Durjana, I'm a bad fellow. Yes, Badmash. Name Badmash. Vishaya Purjana Sada Kama Ratha, and my rati, my attachment is always Sada Pur. So, Kichu Nahi Mora Guna, I do not have any good qualities. So that's the kind of attachment. And then it goes on, and on, and on. Confessing and praying, it's back and forth, confessing and praying, and of course some of the other songs are in this mode of confession. And this confession is a sort of acceptance. It's like saying, okay, here I am with all of my whatever. And because of recognizing what is there now, I can move on from there to what I can be. I can begin from there, from where I am, to, yes, from accepting what I am, accepting my limitations, accepting my faults, to going beyond my faults, going beyond my limitations. There's a lady in America who is a, they call it ultra running. There's long distance running, and there's very long distance running. So this lady does very long distance running, sometimes 100 miles. That's not the non-stop. 160 kilometers, yes. Non-stop. Interesting story, just a little related. We'll try to make it even. If we fail, The lady, she was getting epileptic fits, and she came to discover that she would notice when a fit is coming on, and before the fit would start, she would put on her running shoes, and she would run out the door. She would just start running, and somehow by just running, she could avoid this fit, this epileptic attack. Well, that was working for some time, but then it started to catch up to her, and she was getting these attacks, and they were really heavy attacks, I mean, the kind that people died from. So she was going to the doctors, what to do, what to do. And they said, well, really the only way we can help you is if we can hook you up to a bunch of electrodes and observe your brain while you're having an attack. So they put her in a room and sort of waited until it happened. And it happened. And it was really intense, but they didn't try to stop it because they wanted to see where it was going on in the brain. And so she survived enough, and then the doctors very happily reported, now we know where it's happening in the brain. Modern technology is bringing such things out. So they said, you know, if you like, we can remove that area from your brain. And she said, hey, brain's not helping me now. Go ahead, take it out. So they did an operation. They took out a part of her brain the size of a kiwi. Yeah. And it happened to be the area in her brain where one understands fraction and time. And so they took it out, and gradually she recovered, and she went back to, and she became free from the epileptic. And she took up running again. One day she saw an advertisement for a 50-mile competition. She hadn't been doing any running at all, and she decided to enter the competition. And she wants it. And she does 100 miles of runs, and sometimes there's something they do in Alaska, 400-something miles in the sleds. Amazing. And she has no sense of direction, so one time she went the wrong way. And she didn't realize it until an hour later. It took an hour to get back to the track. So she lost 2 hours. But she still won. And she explained to this reporter who was interviewing her that, how do you do when you're running? Well, she said, I really don't have any sense of time. I just become aware of my breathing and the pacing of my feet. And I put those together and I just focus on the sound of my breathing and my feet. And then when I get into that, there's nothing else. Anyway, my point is that not that we should all go for brain operations, but to extend ourselves, we first take ourselves where we are, and that means doing duty, accepting duty, and making it our own. And there's an interesting thing here that we know there's different dimensions, there's different levels of duty. On the top level, our duty is that we are eternal servants of Krishna. And then we get Varnashram duty, and then we get Kula Dharma, and then we get, and then it boils down finally to Swadharma. What is Om? It's your own duty. And you can take that as meaning your unique duty. There's nobody else who can do what you can do. But to get there, we need to accept so many other levels of duty, so many levels of conditioned life in order to give them up. And that's, I think, what Krishna is saying to people. Do all this duty and then give it up. Sarva dharma. Give it up when you are able. Okay, but there's a curious thing here. As mentioned in the verse, even though you are liberated, you should perform your duty. Yes, but what does Krishna say in the Gita, chapter 3, text 17? He says, yes, svatna reivasya, atma chittas pramanava, atmani evas cha santusha, tasya, yes, tasya kardam, na is the name. A person who is atma chitta, and who is satisfied in self, atmani eva, in the self alone, there's no karya, there's no duty, there's no, literally, should be done. Karya means to be done or should be done. There's no to be done for such a. Alright, so we seem to have a contradiction here. What are we going to do? I'm open for suggestions.
I just took a very tough week.
Okay,
what is it? Further, he has only duties.
Right.
But then he says that for himself there is no duties.
Yes.
He doesn't have to do anything. Nevertheless, he acts. Because if he wouldn't act, then there would be no duties.
So even Krishna accepts this apparent conditioning state of doing one's duty. And then, of course, I guess, too, and Janaka, she did so many things. Why did he do it? And show examples for others. But also, I'm suggesting it's for oneself as well, in order to get to that absolute scripted dharma, I am then it is good. So, and it begins, it's in the verse itself, atmani eva, when a person is really satisfied only by himself. Now that self can be either small self or big self, or a combination of the two, right? We understand in the little self is the little self, or next to us, or somehow or other, Krishna's there. But this is a test. Are we satisfied, completely satisfied with the self, with service? Then there's no other duty. Otherwise, as Ram's done, we can get back to work. Get back to work and be happy in that work, and then find through that your Swadharma. You realize in that Dharma can be your Swadharma.
Yes. one in terms of me, in terms of one's unique material duties as opposed to, as you described, and what we can do for Krishna, or we need to serve to Krishna. We get to the final core of it, is what we can do non-material things, and it's quite difficult.
Of course, it kind of goes together. We, in our unique body, it's me in this body, it's not somebody else's body. So what am I to do in this body? Materially, of course, involvement of maintaining the body, maintaining a family, whatever we may be expected, or whatever responsibilities we may have taken. And then within that, finding what is uniquely my service to Krishna, which is a kind of inclusive service. Whatever we do, you know, whatever I can let them do. That's multitasking.
So your problems are pushing them to a higher realization than just giving up everything behind the revelation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the point here is that being a king is being in a position of being a controller. And Priyavrata is saying, look, I don't want to be like that. Now I'm just going to back off and go to the forest. But that's just another form of being a controller. Now you're going to go to the forest and you're going to, whatever, you're going to hold your breath and you're going to stand on your toes and you're going to control yourself. That's the critique also of the Bhagavata tradition of perhaps in this case the kings who are saying we're going to stop to do everything. But you're not stopping your false ego from being a controller of yourself. This is saying don't think that just by getting up this, you're going to become your tenants. It's very similar to Krishna in his reasoning with Arjuna. You have to, even if it's better, even if you give up this, you're going to be acting according to the nature. Yes. Prophet in the report, he says, in answer to this doubt, Lord Brahma informs him that even those who are liberated cannot resent accepting any present body results of their past. Oh, yeah, I was saying, the body itself is the result of our past experience. So start with your body accepting whatever it is, and whatever its limitations are, whatever its faults are, whatever it's, in a sense, also accepting the common prabhupada, all of these things. Accepting not in the sense of just okay, not wanting to do something, but rather accepting that they're mine. I'm the one who is having this kāna-kṛṣṇa lokā, etc. And that's accepting the responsibility. And then, resentment, what's happening when we resent? Yeah. It's a form of anger, isn't it? It's a sense that somebody imposes something on me that isn't right. And so you're angry against someone else. You don't maybe say it, and so you just carry it around with you and spend the rest of your life cursing the version of who you think has imposed something on you. And who is suffering as a result of that? Yeah, we as well. We're the ones carrying that burden. So, instead of the opposite of it, resenting is accepting.
When you understand from the system is performed for them and they accept it, you want to then we figure out.
Well, it's not really a matter of sitting down. Prabhu's, I'm going to be spending the next week figuring out what my sadharma is. Please don't expect to see me. I'll be in my room. The next week, because I'm going to deeply consider what is my struggle. That's where the accepting of Dharma on different levels and just doing them leads to realizing, understanding, oh, actually, I can do this. In fact, I can do this better than somebody else can do it. So, maybe that's part of my an aspect of it. On the other hand, you know, there is certainly great value in being reflected. I would say not just value, but it's essential. And consulting levels. I just heard a new term. There's coaching, right? That's the new thing. There's also now peer coaching. Anyone know that? In the world?
I wonder about the criteria. Remember, where you look at, I guess it's one way of picking it out is you do what you're good at, and you'll be lucky.
Yeah.
But then, some things
you're
like,
the other thing is, do what you're terrible at, and you're hate. And good beauty.
I do it, it's like, but the doubt I have there is when I figure out something like that, is that it is more of the work of karma yoga than bhakti yoga. You should do what you're asked to do rather than you just like it.
Well, at some point, we throw up our hands and pray to Krishna for help to know to understand. And we also just keep going because that also Krishna in your life is how does that work the Dhamma is a yoga? How does it start? Dejam satata yuktam yuktam. So the satata becomes engagement yoga. So this people and then put down. Ah, oh, sorry, that's been good. Very good.
Okay, good.
Okay, thank you.